Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
Hello, everybody. Thank you again for listening to the football edition of the Buckeye Extra Podcast, hosted by the Columbus Dispatch. I'm Joey Kaufman, Ohio State beat writer. I'm playing Rob Aller as the host today. Rob is away from the office. Rob Aller, columnist for the Dispatch, is with us, as is my colleague Bill Rabinowitz, fellow beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch on Ohio State. And it's kind of a dead point in the offseason. Not a ton of news going on with Ohio State. There have been some quarterback changes here and there, but still a little slow. But I think we'll kind of start off by talking a little bit about Urban Meyer. He's the obviously well-known around these parts, going to be a Fox Sports analyst coming up in the fall. But what's gotten a lot of attention lately was two guys, Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart, who are going to be Fox analysts with Urban Meyer this fall, talking about recruiting Urban Meyer to coach at USC if he struggles, or if USC struggles in this fall. And it's kind of that point in the offseason where people start kicking around stuff. Will Urban Meyer coach again? I'm here with Bill Rabinowitz. He covered Urban Meyer pretty closely and wrote two books for the program. Bill, what did you kind of make of all this chatter? I feel like we probably can do this every 3 months now.
Probably. I think it's probably more wishful thinking on USC's part. I would suspect, I mean, nobody knows, and I'm not sure Urban Meyer knows 100% what he plans to do down the road. Based on what I know, based on what I know of him, I would think it's pretty unlikely that he is going to do that. First of all, USC is a mess administratively. AD, president, I mean, all that stuff is just kind of been up in the air. And honestly, I think that's one of the reasons that that Urban Meyer was inclined to step away last year. His relationship with Michael Drake was not great. I mean, it's a very good relationship with Gene Smith, but I don't think it's a secret that Michael Drake wanted pretty stern penalties resulting from the Zach Smith stuff. And Urban Meyer kind of took the brunt of it, and I'm sure that there are some lingering feelings there. So I think he's very reluctant to step into a situation where the AD, I mean, USC, Joey, you covered USC, you know this a lot better than I do. That's a pretty dysfunctional place, right?
Yeah, it's really not in a great spot. Although he's gone to places that were in havoc before. He went to Ohio State right as they were getting into
He didn't know they were going to have a bowl ban and all that stuff. But yeah, he knew that they were going to have some sanctions, but he didn't think they were going to have a bowl ban that first year. That happened after he got there. Then it was a matter of, okay, how do you deal with this?
Yeah, but I think you're kind of right. I think it's a little bit of wishful thinking. To me, if he's going to cut his reputation as a coach, I think is pretty solidified. I think his winning percentage is third all time, behind Eric Parsegian and Frank Leahy, I think, at Notre Dame. The other issue is if he goes to USC, USC's paying Clay Helton a little under $3 million. Urban was getting close to $8 million at Ohio State. Ohio State's coaching staff is the highest paid in the country. USC's is not. So I think those would be some of the issues. He's not going to go to a place where he can't win a national championship, and I think there would be a good deal of risk involved. We also haven't acknowledge the health problems.
Right. I mean, that was the biggest reason that he stepped down. You know, the Drake stuff was probably a contributing factor, a minor factor, a secondary factor, put it that way. But the major thing are those arachnoid cysts, which aren't going away. And I think that they're certainly manageable when he's not coaching because he doesn't have the stress. But does he want to put himself in a situation of dealing with that again? And California is far away from everything that he knows and loves. His family is here, and a second grandson is here. His son, Nate, plays baseball at UC. I just can't see him uprooting everything to go coach again when he's already proven everything there is to prove as a college coach.
Although I was reading your first book recently. That's a plug.
Thank you.
Buckeye Rebirth. Shelley Meyer did like the Rockies, the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, Fort Collins is a little different than L.A.
Still out west.
True. That's what you took from the book?
I'm just trying to give you a plug here.
Thank you. Did you enjoy it? Are you enjoying it?
I haven't finished reading it yet, but I'm about a third through it.
They win all their games.
No, that's spoiler.
Yeah.
Rob, what do you think?
Hey, guys. Hey.
Out of sight, out of mind.
I'm down here in Charlotte covering a golf tournament, getting all my prep work done for the Memorial Tournament. There's a plug, so I'm not just doing nothing, although some people would say golf, you know, writing is nothing. I wouldn't say that. But here's my take on that whole Urban Meyer thing. One, how would you like to be Clay Helton? You've got two former Trojans already have you out the door and want Urban Meyer in. They're going to sort of recruit Urban Meyer. That was the story. So down here in Charlotte, when I got wind of this, is when somebody down here at the golf tournament said they heard Urban Meyer was going to USC. So that's how things work today with social media. I'm going to come at this from the other side of it. If you believe, like I do, that Urban Meyer will coach again, where are likely landing spots? I think that USC would be in that mix. Everything Bill said is correct, and I think that may be the biggest reason why he would not go to the West Coast is because he's got family here. Coaches all the time make decisions based on their coaching and whether they can win a national title. And in Urban's case, whether he can resurrect a program. I mean, if you look everywhere pretty much where he's gone, things were a little down or in disarray a bit, and he came in, and his brand of discipline, his brand, his system, it works wonders turning a program around. So I think USC would have to get some things in order, the AD, president, whatever the administration is. I can see that as a landing spot. I mean, we've said for years that the only place he would go other than, say, Ohio State in terms of leaving to go somewhere would be Notre Dame. And, you know, Brian Kelly has that program. I mean, they made the playoff, right? So that program's not in disrepair, at least not at the moment. Now, if Brian Kelly would jump to the NFL or something like that, would Urban go there? I know Shelley doesn't like cold weather, so South Bend, it didn't get a whole lot colder than South Bend. But I just don't know how those little things factor in. But I can see USC being in play, at least at some point.
We should take a quick break here to pay the bills. I'm going to read off an advertisement from one of our sponsors.
You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. Rosati Windows believes the right way to do business is really pretty simple. You have to be honest. You have to have integrity, and you have to care about what the customer is selling you and respond accordingly. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he trains all of his employees on the principle that the customer always comes first. Everyone who works at Rosati Windows cares about what they do and the product they put out, from sales through manufacturing to the installation and all the way down until when they peel that last piece of film off the window. They are not going to leave your home until everything is right. It's this sort of commitment that Rosati Windows can proudly stand behind a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business.
One thing I'll follow up on with you guys before we kind of segue into the next topic is, do you think there would be any chance he would ever come back to Ohio State to coach if, say, Ryan Day era doesn't turn out as planned or turns out wonderfully as planned and he goes back to the NFL? Do you kind of see that scenario?
I have not thought about
it. Yeah, I haven't either, but that's an interesting, that's a very interesting question. I can see that happening. In fact, that might be like a perfect scenario for him. Take some time off and then not have to leave and just kind of pick up right where you left off. I don't know. That would be an odd situation, and Ryan Day would really have to kind of fall on his face, I think. And who's to say if that'll happen or not? I don't see that happening. But anymore, as we've talked about, falling on your face at Ohio State, losing 3 games in a season, or consistently losing 2, because Urban never lost more than 2 the entire time he was here. So that's a pretty high bar. I don't know what Bill thinks.
I haven't thought about it at all. I mean, I guess it's probably more plausible than any place other than Notre Dame, because as Joey knows from reading the book, there are only 3 places where Shelley had veto power or didn't have veto power. What were those?
Notre Dame and Ohio State, and I don't remember the third. Yeah. This is bad for my reading comprehension.
Yes, you're there goes your A.
66%.
The other one, Michigan.
D passing? Oh, Michigan,
because he had such admiration for Bo Schembechler. Right. But, you know, it is kind of far-fetched, because could it happen? I suppose in theory it could. I don't think it's worth spending much more time on it than we've already spent.
Yeah, we can get into some real, I guess, tangible stuff as far as the roster. There's been quite a bit of movement on the quarterback front. I guess to catch you guys up to speed, a couple days before Easter, there were 3 quarterbacks at Ohio State, 3 scholarship quarterbacks at Ohio State. They went down to 2 when Matthew Baldwin decided to enter the transfer portal. They had to kind of search for a grad transfer, somebody who could kind of come in and play right away, replenish the quarterback room, would have the potential to be in a competition with Justin Fields, give you an option if for whatever reason he fell out of favor in training camp or during the season. Last weekend, they settled on Gunnar Hoke, who was a graduate transfer from Kentucky. He was a local kid. Dublin Kaufman comes here with 2 seasons of eligibility. He'll get a chance to kind of compete with Justin Fields for that starting job in training camp. He's a little behind not being in Ryan Day's system for spring practice, so he's going to have to do kind of a good bit of catching up. But that was a pitch to them, is they don't have an incumbent starter. He'll have a chance like Matthew Baldwin does to come in and try and win that job. So quarterback room is now back to three scholarship guys.
Do you believe that he has a legit shot at becoming the starter? There's some swamp land here around Charlotte that I could sell you. Yeah, I guess if there's an injury, he steps right in.
That's
it's a
right.
great situation for him, Hope, because what's there to lose? I mean, you're one play away, right?
Right. And, as we've documented many times before, the backup at Ohio State has been called on to rescue the team several times. Kenny Guyton, JT Barrett, Cardale Jones, the list goes on and on. So, it's a good fit. I know that Ohio State wants to make it a competition. It's in their interest to push Justin Fields, to give everyone a shot. But realistically, I mean, come on. It's Justin Fields' job to lose by a long shot. I mean, if there were 1 to 10 odds, I would take Justin Fields at 1 to 10. They also added a freshman, a preferred walk-on, J.P. Andrade, California, who came onto the scene very late. Joey, you might know a little more about him, coming from California, but he put up some pretty big stats in the suburban L.A. area and could be interesting. I mean, I don't know a lot about him, but he's a pocket passer. It's at the very least, it gives them a fourth arm for practice.
Yeah, he's coming from an area of California that's not quite Orange County, the Trinity League, the modern day kind of powerhouse. He's coming from San Gabriel Valley area, kind of San Dimas, which doesn't generally produce a ton of kind of elite top echelon guys. But I think, as you said it, they really just needed kind of a body to run. They need people to run the scout team. They were left with three guys total, two scholarship quarterbacks and a walk-on. And if anybody gets hurt, I mean, they were in a load of trouble where you have to kind of convert somebody. I think it probably is went as well as they could have possibly hoped for. I think especially Gunnar Hoke, who they would probably prefer to have Matthew Baldwin because he had been in the system a little longer. But in terms of talent, I think Gunnar Hoke is pretty intriguing guy. He was a guy who was fairly well recruited by schools. He kind of ended up going to Kentucky because when he was recruited by them, he was recruited by a different offensive coordinator to run kind of a version of the air raid. And Kentucky's one of those schools that was kind of the early kind of the forerunners in the air raid when Mike Leach was there in the 90s. Stoops brought in an OC who was familiar with the air raid. They were going to run that. And well, they changed it. So before Gunnar Hoke got on a campus in 2016, they had fired Shannon Dawson, the old offensive coordinator who ran the air raid. They brought in a new scheme, and they ended up running the ball a ton. They recruited a junior college quarterback who was more of a dual threat guy, so really didn't play well to kind of Gunnar Hoke's skill set, kind of a kid with more of a pocket passer, more of an arm kind of guy you see Ryan Day go after. So he's a better fit for this offense, so I think they kind of want to give him some sort of look.
The irony is that the Kentucky offense shifted to Benny Snell, the running back from Westerville. So you get a Westerville kid who kind of steals the thunder in terms of, scheme and how the system fit for him from the Dublin kid.
So Westerville kid drove a Kaufman kid out and back to Columbus. That is kind of weird.
Kind of, yeah, in a way. Benny Snell went in the draft. He went to the Ravens, right? I think he went to the Ravens. No, Steelers. Went to the Steelers. Don't want to confuse
right.
those two teams. Should we talk about the draft a little bit? I mean, obviously it was last weekend, and Haskins and McLaurin are back together again in Washington, and I don't know what your thoughts might be on that.
Were you surprised that Dwayne Haskins found over kind of 8 days after the fact here, but we can kind of dive into that a little bit. Did that surprise you?
Not really, because if the Giants didn't take him, you figured he would probably fall. Unless somebody traded up to get him. The Bengals, I guess, were not either intrigued by him or by a quarterback, at least not early in the first round. No, Denver, I thought, might take him, but they didn't. And, in some ways, it's a great fit for him because it's his hometown team. He's from the Washington area. Gaithersburg is 25 minutes or so from Washington, and reunited with Terry McLaurin, a third-round pick. That's great for him. Unfortunately for Haskins, the Redskins with Dan Snyder are a very dysfunctional organization. And so I hope that they do right by him. Who's to say that they will or won't? But I'm not surprised. I would have been surprised if he'd fallen any further than 15th.
Well, he kind of had the deck stacked against him because all the teams that Bill mentioned, Denver, I think they're a bit of a dysfunctional mess under Elway in terms of quarterbacks. I always got the sense that Elway's looking for himself to be quarterback there a little bit. They've got some issues, so, maybe it's good that the Broncos pass. The Giants seemingly are a bit of a mess with the way they are doing things lately. And the Bengals are the Bengals. You never know what you're getting with Mike Brown. Then there's the Redskins, and Bill already mentioned it. He kind of lands at a place where Daniel Snyder, he might be the worst of the bunch in terms of just, I don't know, ineptitude. And I always call him he's sort of a Jerry Jones wannabe, worse. You know, so
ouch.
I hope it works out for him. I'm not surprised he fell, whether he even did fall or slide, I guess. Other than the one question that, you know, kind of started to come up was, just the toughness factor, because you got sacked so few times and faced so little pressure that, you know, that I guess they have to find something. So that was the toughness, you know, can he take a hit question. And then, you know, we won't get into it, but, you know, there's some family dynamics there that maybe scared some people off. You just don't know what's true and what's not come draft time.
We didn't get into this too much last week, and I kind of looking back on it, we probably should have talked about this a little more, but what probably hurt him to some degree was last year the fact that you had four teams take quarterbacks in the top 10, so you had fewer teams just off the bat going to be interested in quarterbacks, even though Arizona was basically doing a do-over. And then he's competing against guys in the coming classes, where if you're Cincinnati, maybe you take a quarterback this year, or you could wait next year, and maybe you're in position to try and trade up to get Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama. Trevor Lawrence is a guy in 2 years. Justin Herbert from Oregon will come out next year. So there's some good quarterbacks in the upcoming classes where if a team is kind of on the fence about taking a quarterback that high, maybe you sit it out this year and next year you look at options maybe you like better.
That's a great point. Now, Paris Campbell, I think in some ways Paris Campbell going to the Colts, he's the most intriguing guy for me because I have this right. Is he not the all-time, is he single season?
Yeah, number holder, catches? Yeah, 90 catches. Now, some of those were shovel passes. They were glorified handoffs, but yeah, the 90 catches.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them were, and I remember 2-3 years ago, the big knock was his hands, and he just couldn't catch, so he did improve there. I'm going to wait and see with Paris Campbell. One of the best guys you'll ever want to be around, but I just don't know. Does he have NFL hands? Does he need them? Maybe he'll just be a return guy and a specialist. I mean, I never thought Ted Ginn had great hands, and he's done pretty well in the NFL. So, you know, if Paris Campbell can be anything close to that, he's going to be pretty good.
Well, the good thing for him is his quarterback is Andrew Luck, who's a very accurate passer.
Yep.
So if he puts the ball where it's supposed to be, it makes the receiver's job a lot easier. But I don't think Paris Campbell will ever have kind of natural wide receiver hands. He's a converted running back. He's definitely gotten a lot better with his hands the last 2 years, especially last year. But for a while, you could kind of count on one drop a game, right? And it was like, okay, there's the one. And then he would generally catch the rest. And I think it's underrated how hard it is to catch that ball sometimes. First of all, it's coming at you pretty fast. Secondly, guys are coming at you want to take your head off. So it's easy to say, well, his hands are shaky. Well, you try it. It's not so easy. But
yeah,
he's worked hard at it.
It's amazing.
What?
Absolutely. Yeah, he did improve. But again, it's a bit of a mystery. I mean, it's a good trivia question someday, maybe. You just don't think of Paris Campbell as having the most catches in a season for Ohio State. I mean, you go back to there's a lot of guys that have come through there who are sort of natural receivers when they didn't throw the ball as much.
Not even close.
So that's the big
thing. Not even close.
That's the big deal. But yeah, I mean, look at Antonio Holmes.
Right.
Carter. I mean, the list goes on. You would not put Paris Campbell in that list, and yet here we are. He's got the record, and, you know, more power to him.
What did Michael Thomas have his last year, like 40-some catches? And I remember before that draft when I would do radio shows or whatever else, and they'd say, who among these guys, because obviously that was a great draft class, who among these guys do you think could have a great pro career? And I remember saying, Michael Thomas was underused at Ohio State, and he wants to be great. And, you know, Paris Campbell had double the number of catches that Michael Thomas had his last year, which is kind of amazing. But again, different offense, a lot, you know, that class with Michael Thomas, they had so many weapons. You had Ezekiel Elliott, you had all those guys. There's only one ball. So, and now they're playing faster. I mean, they're having more possessions, more touches for everybody. So, but I agree with you, Rob. I mean, I think that's the biggest question that he has. If he can have great hands or reliable hands in the NFL and develop his route running, because obviously those kind of patterns that he ran at Ohio State were pretty simple. If he can develop those things, boy, I mean, he could be a tremendous player. But those are two pretty big things he's got to prove.
Absolutely.
We haven't talked about Nick Bosa at all. I feel like that's the quietest number two overall pick in some time. All the chatter here was about Dwayne Haskins kind of overlooked Nick Bosa.
Well, I think a lot of that was there wasn't a whole lot of uncertainty about where he would go. Assuming that Arizona took Kyler Murray, which they did, it was pretty clear from the start that San Francisco was not going to bypass him. And, you know, again, and I don't really want to get into all the stuff that came out after the draft about his tweets and all that stuff, but it is, even he said, it'll be interesting for him going to San Francisco, you know, probably the most liberal city in the country. And he said all the right things since the draft, and we'll see how that plays out.
I think my least favorite genre of kind of sports reporting is mining old tweets.
Ugh, it's the worst. I mean, I have kids, and I've told them to be careful about what they tweet and post and all that stuff, but their kids are kids, and, you know, I wouldn't want, if they had Twitter back when I was a kid, I would hope I would have been responsible, but who knows? I mean, you're 17 years old, 18 years old, it's a minefield, and it is for us, honestly. If we tweet the wrong thing, we could get in a lot of trouble very quickly.
Never tweet.
Yeah, that's not an option either, unfortunately.
I was actually surprised how little play that got, at least maybe around Ohio. Maybe nationally his tweets were a bigger deal or made more news, maybe out in the Bay Area. But, you know, tweets are deadly, as we just said, and it can be in terms of getting you in trouble. And his were, not to get into the gory details, but they were fairly inflammatory. So he kind of got through that. Now, will it rear its head again? I don't know, but there was so much maybe other stuff going on that didn't really, maybe that hasn't stuck to him.
I think a lot of it is because he did handle it the right way. He didn't double down on it. He said that he was glad to go to San Francisco. It could help him, you know, grow, learn, whatever word he used. He at least didn't take the bait, and that was smart. And so 49ers fans want him to be successful. I don't think that there are people rooting against him. Then why would they? And he's a nice guy. I mean, I never had any issues with Nick Bosa. I thought he was an intelligent guy and, you know, obviously a hell of a player, and that's what they care about.
We didn't really get to this either, but we could kind of touch on this before we part ways. They picked up a quarterback recruit this week. We named two of the guys they picked up, Gunnar Hoke and the walk-on from California. But they picked up a recruit for 2021, Kyle McCord, somebody from Philadelphia. He was going to be the second commit in that class. Kind of another third quarterback they've kind of got a commitment from the last week. He won't really see the field here for a few years, but kind of another interesting guy in the way that Ryan Day has gone out and recruited more pro-style guys.
Is it true he already entered the transfer portal?
No, but we could have a quarterback competition to watch with Jack Miller and Kyle McCord in a few years. So I mean, one of them will.
The quarterback stuff, and I wrote this story, a story at Sunday's paper, which I had to revise about five times because it kept changing from the time I wrote it on Friday. It is a revolving door. It's just this musical chairs at quarterback because, as we all know, you can only one place. It's not running back or wide receiver. You can rotate. It's one guy, and they all want to be the guy. That's the nature of the personality that plays quarterback. And so it's hard to keep more than one elite player on your roster because they are so impatient, and they can't see the benefits of just waiting and developing and biding their time and being ready when the time comes. Yeah, so let's talk about, you know, Jack Miller and Kyle McCord. Let's get him on campus first before we have a quarterback controversy.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing with him, he is a high school teammate with Marvin Harrison Jr. Kind of the other shoe that could drop here is whether it ends up being kind of a package deal, two for one.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And the last Philadelphia guy Ohio State got was Eddie George. Is that right, Rob?
That sounds right. They may have had a suburban Philly guy.
Right.
I think Eddie George was, that worked out pretty well for him.
They did all right for himself.
McCord is from New Jersey, though. He goes to high school in Philly, so I don't know how that gets listed on the media guide bio there, what his hometown is. Does he pick Philly or does he pick New Jersey? There's
a little known fact, Ezekiel Elliott's not actually from St. Louis. It's the same deal. He lives across the river in Illinois, or his family did, and I think it was Belleville. And so, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, I would say he's from St. Louis. Yeah, it's high school, but he's not really from St. Louis.
We've come full circle because Haskins is from Jersey, right?
But at least he lived in Maryland. I mean, he did. His family did move to Gaithersburg.
Baltimore, yeah.
That's why you listen to the Buckeye Extra podcast. You get the full story, the full hometown breakdown. Come to us for all your news, notes, commentary, banter, off-the-wall Ohio State talk. Please rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes. It helps spread the message about us and finds other people who may want to listen to our podcast. Thank you for tuning in.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.